The word of God which engages us today is found in Genesis chapter 18, this narrative that we heard read of Abraham and Sarah and the three visitors who show up. And the question is asked of Sarah, is anything too hard for the Lord? Too hard for God? That's the question. And that's the question for us to consider as well, too hard for God. As we think about this and understand Genesis 18 and where it sits in the context of the whole story of Abraham and Sarah and all that they've experienced. So have you ever had to wait for something? I remember a number of years ago paging through a catalog and choosing what I wanted and placing an order. At some point I think I called on the phone. I think there was a time when I filled out a form and put it in the envelope and mailed it so that they could receive that, you know, probably with a check or something, and then they would process that, and somewhere in, you know, 3 to 6 months, it felt like I would get my package. Never had to wait for a package. Something to be shipped to you, it's coming, you know it's coming, but, you know, a long time ago we couldn't track packages. You might have to call, right, and you had the tracking number, and you'd wait. And they would tell you it's in Boise or someplace. You're thinking, I'm not even sure how long it's going to take. A few years ago, we signed up for Amazon Prime. Now, we think of things, and they magically show up on the porch 20 minutes later. It's not quite like that. There's a little bit more to it, but man, it sometimes feels that way, right? You have something that you want. You click a few things on the little tiny screen, and then it shows up, and it's very fast, and you know where it is, so if it doesn't make it. Paula ordered a phone case what feels like a long time ago now, and the first order was tracked. It went from where, Georgia or Florida or somewhere in the southeast, and it made it to someplace kind of close, and then it disappeared into thin air. Apparently, because no one knows where it is. So that order got canceled, reorder another one, and now it has been tracked as far as Sunnyvale and then out for delivery, but it's not at our house yet. So we're thinking this is a conspiracy between Amazon and Apple, that if someone orders a phone case, just delay it until they break the screen, and then So Apple is maybe giving them kickbacks. We don't know how this works. But the waiting, oh, goodness. The inconvenience. We live in a society where we're just always connected, and we're, you know, we have what we want when we want it, and, you know, this instant everything. How many have an instant pot that you cook with? A number of people have the instant pot. I don't know. Is it really instant? I mean, you put it in there and close the lid, and you just open it, and it's ready. Well, that's where we're going, I think. Like, everything has to be right now, right? It used to be the microwave, and now the microwave's too long to wait for. We need the instant. It takes 30 seconds to make something in the microwave. We need it now. I don't have that time to waste. Right? I hate lines. I hate waiting. I want to always be connected. We flew back from the Midwest on our trip, and we had a flight from Cincinnati to Chicago and then Chicago to San Jose. And on that second flight, the outside of the plane, or maybe just inside the door, I'm not sure where it was, it said Wi-Fi enabled. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can finish the movie that I started on the first flight. That'll be good, because we got like halfway through. Cincinnati to Chicago is not very far, so we did not finish the movie. And then we're trying to get connected, right? And then they finally come on, the co-pilot or one of the flight attendants, we're sorry for the inconvenience, but the Wi-Fi on this plane is out. I've been cheated. The plane said it had Wi-Fi. I want to watch the end of my movie, and I want to watch it now. So now I'm going to have to find this movie and rent it or something, and I'm sending them the bill. Right? We don't want to wait. Don't want to wait for anything. Genesis chapter 18, in the story, it's about Abraham and Sarah, and the waiting is the hardest part. How many have a song going through your head right now? Mm-hmm. Yep, the waiting is the hardest part. It's a song from, I don't know, 1970-something, probably. And it's true, the waiting is the hardest part. We don't like waiting. Abraham and Sarah had been promised a son. God had told Abraham. First, he had called him from where he lived to go to Canaan. This is in Genesis chapter 12. His name was Abram at that time, and he said, come on, I want you to go to this land. I will show it to you. Get your stuff. Let's go. And Abram does it, which is striking to begin with, right? We want all the fine print. We want to know where we're going, how it's going to work out. We want to know kind of the end of the story. Abram shows a lot more faith than that, gets up, packs up his stuff, and takes off. He's going to a land that's been called Canaan, the Holy Land, Palestine, all kinds of things, Israel. It's that land, the promised land. The promise was made to Abram, right, that he would receive this land. So he gets up and he goes, and so he's on his way, and time goes by, and Abraham laments to God that he has no offspring, and that happens in chapter 15. He complains that Eleazar of Damascus would be his heir, and this is what God says to him. The word of the Lord came to him, to Abram, this man shall not be your heir, your very own son shall be your heir. And he brought him outside and said, look toward heaven and number the stars if you are able to number them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. So it's like that kind of sky. Not go out in the night sky of Silicon Valley and count the 12 stars, because that's kind of easy. Go to a place where there's not all this light pollution and, you know, constant fog or whatever that we have, and we can't see that many stars. Go to a place where it's really dark, look up in the sky, and it's like that. And you can't count the stars. And that's the promise to Abraham. And so he's, you know, gets this promise, and there's a covenant with it that his offspring would inherit the land. Now, more time passed, and God didn't seem to be really doing anything about it. Understand this, Abraham was 75 when God said, move to Canaan. Pack up your stuff and move. He was 75 years old. And time has passed between then and when he's lamenting he has no son, and more time has passed by the time we get to chapter 18. So if you have felt old, don't. Because Abraham was 75 when this story really begins. We know this, though, they weren't young. Abraham and Sarah weren't of childbearing age, the text describes. And they've received this promise, and it feels like it's too late. How do we respond when there's unfulfilled promises? How do we react to that? There's a country song about unanswered prayers. Have you heard that one? Theologically, that's not good. There's no such thing, actually, as unanswered prayers. God's answers to prayer, there's three of them. Yes, no, and wait, or not yet. Right? Those are God's three answers. So there's no such thing as unanswered prayer, because maybe God said no, or maybe God said not yet. And so Abraham and Sarah are kind of stuck in this not yet time. They know the promise is there. God has said yes, but the reality hasn't arrived. They don't have what God had promised. So how do you respond to that? When we feel like we're waiting, and even waiting on God, we might get impatient, right? You ever get impatient with God? God, I want this to happen, and I'm ready for it a long time ago. And maybe that long time ago is like our long time ago, like 20 minutes. Or doubt. Have we doubted because something that we want, that we desire, that we feel we need, hasn't happened for us, and we've been faithful and we've prayed for it and we've wanted it, and it's just things aren't going the way we'd expect, aren't going the way we would want, even the way that it feels like would be right in this time, in this moment, right? And no matter what that is, maybe for you, the thing that you're waiting on is for, you know, a big life event, and it just isn't there. Maybe it's, you know, a health related thing, and you're waiting because, you know, if you can get over this illness or recover from this issue, then life would get better, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. Maybe the thing that you're waiting on is for success of some kind or an achievement of some sort. And if you begin to doubt God because it just feels like maybe my prayers aren't heard. You ever thought that? Have you ever thought maybe the thing I wanted, God doesn't want to provide. Maybe the thing that I'm hoping for, well, God maybe doesn't care as much for me as he does for somebody else. And if you ever compared yourself to someone whose like timeline is, oh, I want to be on that timeline, and I've got this time. Have you ever doubted God? Have you ever even felt that loss of faith or been ready even to move on? Abraham and Sarah struggled with all of these feelings, all of these thoughts. Abraham had already exhibited the doubt, like the despair over, ah, God, I don't have an offspring. You've promised me this land and Eleazar of Damascus? Really? Come on. And Abraham and Sarah probably struggled with, you know, is God really caring? Is he really going to do this? Right? And they even tried it on their own. See, you can go your own way. Now I just put another song in your head. You can go your own way. You can go your own way. And Abraham and Sarah tried it, actually. Abraham and Sarah tried their own plan. That's in Genesis 16. So the call to go happens in chapter 12. And then the covenant is in 15 and 16. It was a conversation that might have gone something like this. Sarah comes to Abraham and says, you know, it wasn't to me that God promised the son. It was to you, Abraham. And here's a way this could work. I have this servant. Her name is Hagar. You've met her. She's kind of cute, right? Maybe that part's not part of the conversation. I don't know. But here's a solution. If you take Hagar as a wife, you can have a son. God's promise gets fulfilled. We're good. Uh-huh. How'd that work out for them? Not so good. I mean, it went that way. Hagar and Abram conceived a son. But then Hagar and Sarah didn't get along anymore. Hagar was not nice to Sarah because she actually taunted her over Sarah's inability to have a child. And Sarah said, well, Abraham, this is on you. Send her away. And so Abraham does. Ishmael was the child. Not a good situation when we take things into our own hands and try to wrestle control away from God and pursue what we want on our own expectation or timeline or ability. Maybe you've said these words, if it is to be, it's up to me. Have you said that? And have you tried to do more? Have you tried to work harder? Maybe if I work harder, I can get to where I'm trying to go. Maybe if I do more, or I get some kind of new training, or I try to do some kind of new activity, new experience, new something more. What's missing in this whole equation of what's going on in my life and the things I really want that aren't happening? What am I not doing? What do I not know? What have I not put in? What effort have I not made? And our focus becomes on ourselves and what we can do. Or our focus turns away from the current situation to maybe we get that grass is greener idea. Oh, maybe if I look for a new opportunity. Maybe things will get better if I just do something different. If I pursue something new, if I network with some people and meet the right new friends, find the right new doctor, get the right new situation. I'll be satisfied. I'll be happy if. And that's a hard place to live. Hard place to be. When things aren't going the way we want, when things aren't happening the way we would expect, then we can start to feel like maybe God doesn't care, or maybe we haven't done enough, or maybe, and we're asking all these questions and we're striving through all these situations. That's about where Abraham and Sarah were when the question in chapter 18, verse 14 of Genesis comes, is anything too hard for the Lord? Is anything too hard for the Lord? That was God's response when Sarah laughed. I put this older woman up here because understand this. Sarah was like 89 when God showed up and said, this time next year, you're going to have a son. Well, he said it to Abraham, but Sarah was listening. And this time next year, Sarah's going to have a son. Picture yourself, you're 89 years old and you hear someone say that. What's your reaction? Of course she laughed. Why wouldn't she laugh? That's about the best, actually, of the possible reactions to that statement. And this time next year, you're going to have a son. She could have screamed in fear, like, what? I don't want to be a 91-year-old diaper changer. Are you kidding me? I've given up on that. I don't want to do it anymore. She could have pushed back against what God said. There's all kinds of reactions that Sarah could have made to that statement because it seems like such an outlandish promise. Laughing is not the worst, actually. It might be about the best. But isn't that what God does? Doesn't God specialize in things that don't make sense or things that surprise us? Doesn't God do things that we wouldn't expect him to do or do things in a way that just we wouldn't think of? Creation. Great example. God created, and the Bible narrative said he created in 7 days. Doesn't make any sense to us. Scientists have been trying to make sense out of that forever, right? Doesn't make sense. It's true, it doesn't make sense. God spoke, it happened, everything was in a week? Really? Okay. How about Noah? Building an ark didn't match Noah's credentials. That wasn't on his resume anywhere. When God was looking for someone to build an ark, it makes sense for him to choose a shipbuilder, right? Not some other dude. And that's who he picked. This one, some guy named Noah. He picked him because why? He was righteous. And he paid attention and he listened to God's instructions. Leading God's people wasn't Moses' strength. Moses didn't make sense as a choice to lead God's people when they were in captivity in Egypt for 400 years. And Moses had fled and was out tending sheep on a mountaintop someplace. And God said, hey, guess what? You're the guy. What'd Moses say? Uh-uh. No, I'm not. I'm not the guy. Prove it to me. And so God did, and Moses did. Choosing a shepherd boy to anoint as God's king was a surprise, right? Choosing David, even among his own brothers, David wasn't the best choice, and yet David was God's choice. And so on and so forth. Gideon pressing or threshing wheat in a wine press. Oh, guess what? You're going to go lead God's people. Huh? He didn't feel qualified. He didn't feel ready to do it. Does the cross make any sense? The Son of God incarnate come to take on flesh and human sin and die for us? Like God dying? That doesn't make sense. If God begins to make sense, we're doing it wrong. Because our God doesn't make sense. God is too big to make sense. If we try to squeeze the infinite into something that we can understand, something we can contain, we've missed. That's not God anymore. That's somebody else. That's God creating God in our image, according to our understanding. God does what he wants according to his timing. Period. Now, we can pray, we can intervene, we can ask, we can seek, and all the things that we can do. But God does what God does. And we're called to wait for the Lord. Wait for the Lord. In Psalm 27, verse 14, near the end, it says, "Be strong and let your heart take courage and wait for the Lord." Be strong and let your heart take courage. It takes courage to trust and to wait. It takes courage to wait for God to act and not jump out ahead of him and hope he catches up. It takes courage to follow God's plan. It took courage for Abraham to do it, to get up and to go. That courage waned from time to time. But Abraham was courageous and faithful to God. Isaiah 40, verse 31, talks about waiting. And he says, "They who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength, they shall mount up with wings like eagles, run and not be weary, walk and not faint." It's hard to wait. But they who wait on the Lord get that renewal from him. Maybe it's not even the renewal, maybe not according to our timing and in the moment that we first even need it. We'll start to question, we'll start to wonder, we'll start to even doubt. But they that wait on the Lord will renew their strength. Hebrews chapter 11, the great faith chapter, promises this: faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For Abraham and Sarah to see beyond what they could imagine, what they had experienced, what made sense, was to wait for God, to wait for him to act. Sarah was in that moment of, "I don't think so." And God made the promise and renewed the promise. And guess what happened? About a year later, a kid named Isaac. You know what Isaac means? Laughter. Clever name. Waiting on the Lord means patience. Through struggle, through trial, through doubt, through questioning, through disappointment even, patience. It means listening. What's God say? What does he promise? Listening for his voice. Listening for him to give the indication that it's now time. Watching for him to be at work, paying attention to what he is doing, because God is on the loose, as our friend Greg Finke says. God's doing things. In our lives, in our neighborhoods, around us, maybe not the thing that we're hoping for or waiting for, but God is doing things. And what waiting for the Lord means being faithful, confident in his ability and his timing. And waiting for the Lord means being active. Because waiting for the Lord doesn't mean being idle. It doesn't mean just sitting and waiting, right? I'm going to wait for the Lord. I'm going to sit right here and wait. That's not what it looks like. There's a story that's told, maybe you've heard it before, about a guy, the storm was coming and they're predicting floods. And he said, "Oh, I'm going to wait on the Lord." And so the rain starts falling and the waters start rising and someone comes in a four-wheel drive and says, "Hey, we're evacuating people. We'll hop in the truck and let's go." And the guy says, "No, I'm going to wait on the Lord." And then the waters get a little higher and now people are coming around the neighborhood in boats. And so they find him and they knock on it. They're like, "Come on, get in the boat because we can take you to safety." And he says, "No, I'm okay. I'm going to wait on the Lord." Well, the waters keep rising, and he has to climb out on his roof, and he's there, and a helicopter comes overhead, and they're going to lower down and rescue him. They're going to pick him up and scoop him and take him to safety. And he says, I'm okay, I'm waiting on the Lord. And the flood waters come and he dies. And he gets to the gate, gets ushered in, and he comes to God and he's like, Lord, what? Why didn't you rescue me? I was waiting for you. And God says to him, look, I sent you a four-wheel drive, a boat, and a helicopter. What are you waiting for? We don't sit and wait for God in that kind of way. It doesn't mean being idle. Martha gets criticized because she's focused on the details while Mary wants to listen to the Lord. Both are important, actually. Because if you look at the beginning of this narrative in Genesis 18, Abraham was like, hey, let's visit a little bit. Let me get you a snack. And then he runs around and makes a full-on meal in that Middle Eastern hosting kind of way for these visitors, the Lord. Waiting for God doesn't mean sitting and being idle. It means to take action in a faithful way according to God's plan and his timing. Abraham was obedient to God. Not just leaving his land and everything he knew, but he was obedient to God when commanded to circumcise. He was obedient to God when God said, take your only son Isaac and sacrifice him. It didn't happen, just in case you didn't know that part of the story. Noah was faithful to pick up a hammer. Moses did return to Egypt and lead God's people. Isaiah and Jeremiah were prophets through difficult times. Jesus was obedient even to death on a cross. The disciples went to the ends of the earth according to God's timing. Some of that sent them was persecution and hardship. Sometimes God's acting through those things too. Many times we don't see what God's up to and how he's using everything according to his will and purpose. Life can be hard, but let's wait. Let's wait in faith because we know this, nothing is too hard for God. Is anything too hard for the Lord? No. Is it hard for us to wait? Often. But let's wait. Our action challenges this week are to commit to praying for patience and discernment. We can be so impatient. I don't like waiting. Let's pray for patience and discernment. And let's serve God through faithful action where we are with what we have. Looking beyond what we can see, trusting in the one who's taking us into the unknown. But being faithful in the here and now. Let's wait. Amen.